because I'm taller than most people. Then I'll put that up. Well, I am Christina M. I am a grateful member of Al-Anon. I do go to the Soto Group in Olive Branch. We meet on Thursdays at 7:30. My serenity date is April 28th of 2010. I'm going to cry already. I will preface this with saying that this is the first time I give my speech without my mom. She never heard my speech, so this is the first time she gets to hear it, and she just passed away. So when you start on the Al-Anon bandwagon, I don't know that you wake up one day and you live a normal life and you go, I'm going to go to Al-Anon. So to figure out what drove me to Al-Anon, you have to go back to the very beginning. I was born on February 8th of 1985. I am a complete baby in this world, which I see in the world of Al-Anon, and I see it as a gift, is that I get all these years to be able to live healthier than I did way before I ever knew what Al-Anon was. So the day I was born was one of the biggest ice storms in Memphis. Yes, that ice storm. My parents did not have a lot of money. They didn't have a lot to their name. They had an old beat-up car with tires that didn't have treads on them. The hospital I was born at, you have to go over a bridge to get to the hospital. My dad couldn't get the car over the bridge, so my mom had to get out and walk all the way to the hospital to have me. So I, you know, from day one, I was just a force to be reckoned with. And so, you know, my parents were together until I was about two or three, so I don't remember them being together. My reality is a divorced family. I had two different households that I got to go to, and that was my norm. I had no idea what it was like to have a mom and dad that lived in the same house. And they agreed on disagreeing most of the time. Lots of stories of fights and things that I don't remember, so that's probably a great thing. My mom raised my brother and I. She was a gift. It's funny as an adult how you look back at your childhood and you see that your parents did everything that they could with what they had. It's easy to judge as a child. Why don't I have the Abercrombie and Fitch everything? And why don't I have? And once you get to an adult and you realize what life actually entails, you know that they did what she could. My mom was a very selfless lady. She did not take care of herself. We always had shoes, we always had clothes, we always had the best of everything. Christmas with my mom was, we may have been broke, but at Christmas you would have never known. I don't know where or how she did it. We would wake up and it was just rooms full of stuff. And that was our childhood. But she didn't have shoes to go to work. Her shoes had holes in them. Her clothes, she had three or four different outfits that she wore all the time. And as a child, I noticed that, but I didn't really realize what that meant. You know, but everybody externally from our house, everything was beautiful. We talked about only great things. Anything that happened at home stayed at home. Our secrets are our secrets and nobody else's to know. So as my brother and I got older, we become very quiet people. We don't tell our secrets. We don't tell anything that's happening. We hold everything inside. So, you know, hence the lead up to Al-Anon. So when we were about 10, we moved to Jackson, Tennessee, to live with my grandmother who had fallen ill and she needed help. And so my grandmother was a very proper lady, you know, from the 1920s, 1930s era. And, you know, Christina, you need to sit up straight, shoulders back. You know, proper women don't wear black. You know, and I always had this Garth Brooks shirt that I always liked to wear that was black, and she just loathed it. You know, but she got up every morning and put on her pantyhose and put on her dress, and, you know, that was her way. You know, she drank out of these glasses that were just sipper glasses, and I gulp everything. So it was a total mismatch. But my mom would pick us up from school every day, and we always stopped by some kind of fast food restaurant. We'd eat. When we got home, we lived with my grandmother. My grandmother would have cooked a meal. And so my mom would tell us that we had to eat again because we didn't want to make grandma unhappy. So we learned at a very early age that you wanted to please other people. You couldn't stand up and say, you know, I'm sorry, I'm not hungry, or we've already eaten, because we didn't want grandma to know that we had stopped at the fast food joint, whichever one it was at the time, because we didn't want her to be unhappy, because then she'd be upset. Yeah, I remember a Thanksgiving when I was growing up that my grandmother didn't like the conversation that was happening with the family, so she got in the middle of the kitchen, pulled out her ironing board, and started ironing clothes. You know, this was the reality of how I grew up. Once my grandmother passed away, my mom really struggled keeping it all together. My grandmother kept a very tidy house. She kept, all the laundry was done. All the underwear was folded just so. Then my grandmother passed away, and my mom was never very good at keeping a house together as a single mom with two kids. I now struggle with that myself, but I only have one. So now I get it. But I got to where I would go to my dad's every other weekend. And what he provided for me was a bedtime. At 10 o'clock, the house shut down. Things were clean. There was dinner on the table at a certain time. We didn't eat two or three times in a night and wonder why we have weight problems. I had the structure there every other weekend that I always just strive for, and I thrived for it. But when I go back to mom's house, we were up to 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning, and then get up and go to school and do that cycle every day. And it just, as a child, you don't realize how much it wears on you. And then I would see how life is over here and these two different ways to live life. And I've always been told I have an old soul. And so when I turned 14, I made my first major life decision. I spent a week at my dad's. Before I left, I had cleaned up my mom's house, did all the laundry, you know, had everything organized, left her a grocery list, because at 14, you're making grocery lists. A caregiver, people pleaser right here. Got home, the house was trashed. Everything was dirty, stuff all over floors, tables. I don't know what they did in that week to make that possible. And I found on the table, back in the day we had paper perforated signs that she had printed out, "Welcome home, Christina," but it was on the table with all this other stuff. And I called my dad, and I told my dad to come back and get me, that I didn't want to live this way anymore. And he did. I cannot imagine, now that I have my own child, how much that hurt my mom when I made that decision. But it was the best decision I've ever made. Of course, you know, I go to my dad's house. My dad has always been my idol. He hung the moon. I'm going to tell you, he hung the moon. He can lasso it. He can bring it down. He's got it going on. And so my dad does no wrong. Anything he says is exactly what you do. And we have a joke that, you know, we are Morgans and we are always right. So if the world would listen to us, it would all be a better place. So, yeah, that gets us into trouble. So I moved to my dad's house. You know, he has us in private school. So I go to a private school in Memphis. And I do well because I want to please my dad. I've always been the good kid. I've always been the one that everybody's like, oh, she's great, and what's wrong with your brother? You know, why is he always in trouble? We would get report cards, and my brother would get C's and D's, and I would have the A's and the B's, and my mom would take us to Toys R Us while my brother had to watch me pick out a toy, and I got to get a toy, and my brother didn't get one because I got the good grades, and I always wanted to be on the upside of getting the good stuff. I never wanted to be the kid that had to watch. And so I just shot for the stars every day. It's a lot of pressure. And so I went to private school, got into high school, you know, same thing. Great grades. What can I get involved with? What can I do to make myself even more? Because I am all about showing everybody at this school and everybody that we know that I am number one. And I can make it, and I'm fabulous and amazing, and you want me to run this school. By the time of my senior year, I didn't really go to class because I was in the principal's office talking to her about things we need to do to improve the school. So, because that was me. I even got an award when I graduated high school that they have now retired for all the work that I did at that high school. So, I mean, it's ridiculous, the things that I did to please other people and for my own self. You know, I wouldn't say it wasn't for me. It was to make sure everybody thought I looked good, that I was okay, that people would like me. And so it was really that. So by the time I had graduated high school, I was the SGA president. I was the yearbook, editor. I was prom queen, because you have to be prom queen at the end of senior year to make it all work. So I was it. So everything lined up. I hit all my marks. And so now I had to make a decision about college, because I was going to go to college, because my daddy always said, you go to college, you get your degree. You're not worth anything if you don't have your education. Okay. So what college do you go to other than the college that your daddy went to? So I talked about going to Notre Dame or talked about going different places, but I ended up at Christian Brothers University because that's where my daddy went. And he wanted to be an engineer. And so I was like, okay, I'll go be an engineer. So I ended up in the engineering program at Christian Brothers. It was great. I love thinking about the structures and how things work. That really works my mind. But it got down to, I finally went, I don't know that this is what I want to do every day. So once that hit, I was like, oh, I'm going to hurt my dad, because I'm about to make a decision that it goes against what he wants. And so I rebelled. I had my little moment. Now, my rebelling and everybody else's rebelling is two different things, because I am a goody-two-shoe in the worst way. I mean, I should have probably rebelled harder, but I didn't. So when I rebelled, I started hanging around people I wasn't supposed to. I would date guys and take them to their drug dealers to get their drugs and drive them around, but I never did the drugs. I was just the driver. I was the one that hung out with the drug dealers. Who just hangs out with, the drug guys? I don't, not a whole lot of drinking. I would drink. My dad drinks. And I was 14. The first time I got drunk was with my dad. So drinking was good. I was okay with it. That if he had four rules for me and my brother when we were growing up: don't smoke, don't do drugs, don't get pregnant, and don't get somebody else pregnant. So only three applied to me. So I was like, easy enough, easy enough. So didn't do drugs, and I didn't end up pregnant when I was in high school. I did good. Met all of his expectations except for this college thing. So hung out with these, and I was like, one day I was just kind of like, this is just kind of not the lifestyle that I want. I hadn't fought this hard to go get through school. Of course, this was my third year of school at college that I decided to do this. So I remember having this chemistry class that I would just kind of every once in a while show up to. If I did, I didn't do my homework. If I made it or I was late, that was the first time I failed a class. And I was like, because F means failure. It is not like, try harder next time. It's I failed. I failed at life. Not a class, not, it happens every once in a while, everybody has this. I failed at life. So I was like, okay, so I'm going to do something different. So by this time, my parents had we've all moved to Mississippi, and I was like, I'm going to go work at a restaurant that sells alcohol because you can make more money there. And so at the time, I worked for a place that didn't. So I went to this restaurant in Olive Branch, applied. Of course, I put on my application that I went to Immaculate Conception and Christian Brothers, and this guy interviews me. He's like, so you're a Catholic schoolgirl? I was like, yeah. He's like, so the plaid skirts and everything? I was like, yeah, apparently that's what got me the job. But, I was so naive that I did not catch on to that until years later. So naive, because I go dressed to impress, because we are always, regardless of what's happening on the inside, you're always dressed to impress. So when they called me and told me the schedule was ready, I went up there to check the schedule. Well, I don't go up there in the clothes I've been running errands in. I go dressed to impress. So I walk into the kitchen and I'm looking at the schedule, can't find my name. Well, this guy walks up behind me and he says, "What are you doing in my kitchen?" And I was like, I mean, how rude. You know, I was just like, I'm just trying to figure out when I'm supposed to work. And he's like, "What is your name?" I was like, "I'm Christina." And he's like, "All right, you're supposed to be here at such and such time." I was like, "Okay." And I left. I was like, God, I mean, he is just rude. And I will tell you what I actually thought, but we're at a church and it's just not appropriate. So that was the moment I met my number one qualifier. I met him. Had no idea. So I worked there for a while. You know, something about restaurant business. You know, you're going to school and you're working all these shifts. You're around these people all the time. Everybody starts hanging out. Everybody's talking. It's just what you do. No big deal, right? Because drinking isn't a problem. Alcoholism is a guy on the street with a bag asking for money. That's what I thought. I mean, my childhood was not all about drinking and drugs. I didn't know anything about it. It was the people who live on, you know, the north side. Those people. So, I mean, I didn't realize that they're full functioning people. And so, I mean, even if I would have, I have a great way of picking people who need help, because I want to help people because I have it all together. So if I can do it, I can give it to you and we can change your reality. So time goes on. We start hanging out, a group of us. You know, and every shift it was, well, who's going to liquor store and who's going to buy what? You know, so we were just, you know, it was always bottles of stuff and it was every day. You know, and I mean, I can hang with anybody drinking, but there's a difference between me and him. I could walk away and he couldn't. I didn't realize that difference until I've been in Al-Anon for 5 years. So every day we would do this. Our preference of drinks was Jaeger. So we would go and get a fifth of Jaeger every day, go back to, you know, the hangout there, his house and all of his friends' house or whatever, and drink this every night because that's normal and healthy. And I'd still go to school. I'd still do my thing. It was just no big deal. I'm going to tell you what happens when you drink Jaeger. You end up pregnant. It will get you pregnant every day of the week. I don't drink Jaeger anymore because I don't want any more kids. So I swear it's Jaeger's fault. So it's all their fault. I should really sue the company. She's a blessing. She's a gift. So I'm pregnant. I'm like, I haven't finished school. What am I going to tell my daddy? Oh my God. My daddy told me not to get pregnant and I haven't finished school. I don't have my, you know, 6-figure job yet. I don't have a house with the white picket fence. I don't have 2 cars. I mean, the last thing I was supposed to do was get the 2.5 kids. I don't know where the 0.5 works then, but it works. And so how am I supposed to tell my dad? And so I waited. I took 2 pregnancy tests. They were as positive could be. You know, and I went up to the restaurant and I told him, I said, "Hey, I'm, you know, my dad, my qualifier, said I'm pregnant." He said, "Okay, let's get married." I was like, I mean, hold on. I was like, I mean, we just found out I was pregnant. I'm not ready to get married. Like, I mean, I'm not ready for all this. Like, I'm just trying to soak in this whole fact. The whole time I'm like, how am I going to tell my dad? So I waited until I went to the doctor, and I had the doctor confirm that I was pregnant. I was like, so you're for real? I'm pregnant. And she's like, I mean, yeah. She's like, it amazes me that people ask that. You know, I'm just like, well, I just wanted to be sure before I cross this bridge. So we go to lunch with my dad and my stepmom, who already knew. So I've already, you know, broken the news to her, and she's dying because she knows it's going to be a big deal. And so it was the worst lunch ever. I couldn't even tell my dad I was pregnant. I told my dad he was going to be a grandfather and let him figure it out from there. Like, I was just like, not going to happen. So nobody ate. From what I understand, my dad was drunk for 3 days after that. So whether he needs to check into a program, that's up to him. But everything was okay. You know, but we still go back. And he was, but, you know, my qualifier was still drink every day. And I'm like, oh, you know, okay. You know, the baby's not here yet. It's not time to play house yet. So we're good. You know, but I went to school. I was like, you know, I'm going to get myself together. I'm not going to wait tables and do this. It's time for me to really get this going, because I have a drive to do so much and so many things in life. And so that's exactly what I did. I finished college when my daughter was one, right after she turned one. And then she was born August 4th of 2007, the best day of my life. I knew when I saw her in the ultrasound, you know, and my dad and my brother and Dylan, my qualifier, and you know, they're all standing over there like, we're going to buy Tonka trucks, and we're going to have tractors, and we're going to, you know, and the lady was like, y'all better buy some pink ones. I'm like, yes! You know, it was so exciting. And I knew right in that moment that was the one. It was going to be me and her against the world. I knew then it was the two of us. And I was just like, you know, I had accepted that, but there is no action piece to that. Because I was still going to make this happen. She wasn't going to grow up in a divorced home. So I know what to do. I'm going to make you stop drinking. Done. So challenge accepted. So I accepted the challenge. So she was born, and in her baby pictures, there are bottles, whether beer, and not really a whole lot of liquor. He hid those pretty well, but the beer was always on the table. You know, I would get up in the morning, and he would just be naked, just either in the hallway, under the computer desk, wherever. Depending on my mood, I might cover him up or step over him, either way. And I'm just, you know, just got my daughter, took her to school, and that was our norm. He, of course, still worked in the restaurant business, and he, you know, he made good money there, so money wasn't a huge issue. And so, you know, the days he was off, he would keep her at home so we wouldn't have to pay the extra daycare for her to go those extra days. I got to where there were days that I would get home and there was a deck of cards laid out around his body as if it was a line, you know, like one of those police lines. And I was just like, oh my God. I'm like, this is normal. And, this is great. Or I would get home, and she would have her baby dolls, and she would have put all those little plastic bottles that have the fake milk in the microwave for 20 minutes. And I would just happen to get home before they exploded. I mean, there's some God things here. I got to where I didn't want to leave work. I hated going home. I finally had my family, this family that I always wanted. And I couldn't go home. I would white knuckle all the way home because I didn't know, was today the day that he was going to be drunk? Did he decide to not drink today? He told me time and time again, I'm going to quit. Today I'm going to quit. Today I'm going to quit. Every time I believed him, I was like, okay, we're good. We're quitting today. And then, of course, that lasted for a couple of days. It's now I know that he truly did mean that. He wanted to, but he couldn't. And so, I came in, his mom was in Al-Anon. That's how I found out about Al-Anon. So, and this is how I know Philip and Teresa. She came to my house. You know, there are no red flags. Your dad's an alcoholic. Your mom's been in Al-Anon for 8 years when I first meet you. I mean, no red flags whatsoever that you might be an alcoholic. Yet we sit and talk about your dad and how drunk he is all the time and how much of an alcoholic he is. Hello. Missed it altogether. And so she comes by the house, and she's got this little post-it note, and she sticks it on the refrigerator, and it says, Philip Lamb, Teresa Lamb, puts her phone number. She's like, if y'all ever decide y'all need help, y'all call one of these numbers. This was 3 years before I ever came into Al-Anon. I swear to God, when I met these two, I was like bowing down. I was like, this is like Father AA and Mother Al-Anon, because that's all I knew. That was all I knew. They had been on my refrigerator for all these years, and here they are. And so it was so funny, and it's always such a blessing to me to be able to be a part of my recovery with them. So I decided I needed help. You know, I got to where I didn't want to wake up anymore, and this is something I still live with, to somebody peeing in a corner, a bathroom, a laundry hamper. There was never a bathroom. It was never the toilet. Laundry hamper, it was just everywhere. The bed. We were dating, and he would pee the bed. And I don't know what, I mean, red flag. Never, I missed it. And I was just like, bless his heart. He's got some goodness issues. Oh, my goodness. I never realized that one had to do with the other. And so to this day, if I'm asleep and there is running water starts going, I will wake up in a minute, trying to figure out where the water is. I got very good at redirecting. And so it was, I mean, it was just, you know, there's just a life here that is just not normal. It's just, you know, at some point you accept that you need to do something different. Money started getting tough. He quit his job. Not only did he quit his job, he didn't tell me he quit his job. He would get dressed. He would leave when we left. And then when we got home, he wouldn't be there because he worked restaurant hours. So, you know, I don't know where he went, never asked. Until about 3 days later, I get a call from one of his friends. And he's like, hey, have you seen Dylan? I was like, I mean, yeah, he's at work. What's up? He's like, oh, you know, nothing. I'll just talk to you later. And I'm like, no. What's up? And he's like, no, nothing. And he hangs up. And I'm like, what happened? I get home, and he's drunk. And he hadn't been at work. And he was drunk at work and threw his keys at his boss. I don't know if you get fired or terminated at that point or you quit. Either way, you're done. So, and that was 3 days prior. And I'm like, how could you get dressed every day and not tell me, the person we're sharing our lives together? You know, this is our fairy tale. And, you know, we're, you know, this isn't working. So, April 28th, 2010, was my very first Al-Anon meeting. I called his mom and I told her, I can't do this anymore. My life is unmanageable. I knew the first step. I was like, okay. Of course, I'm the kind of person, okay, I got the first steps down. I don't really need the second or third. So if we could just go on past the fourth and fifth, because we don't really have to do my inventory. I'm perfect. And then go on, you know, to the next thing. Got it. So I walk into this meeting and everybody's crying right along with me. I cried through the whole thing. I bawled, cried through the whole thing. And then I found out about the Maples group. And so that was my first Thursday. I went in there to find out how to get him sober. It was never about me. Never about me, because all they needed to tell me was what to do. I need an action plan. If we give me an action plan, I will do it. He will be sober. We'll have happily ever after. Because my plan was, because I have a plan for everything, is that he would get sober, I would do Al-Anon, we would travel the world together, and that's how we would afford to travel, is that we would go and tell our stories everywhere. Needless to say, one of us is doing a little more traveling than the other. And so it's funny, I was actually telling my sponsor, Gail, about that, and I was like, you know, we're heading up here, and I was like, isn't it funny how that was my dream for both of us to do that, and now I'm getting the opportunity to share my part of that story. So it's a gift. So I go to Al-Anon. I meet these fabulous people. They tell me, do keep coming back. That is their advice. And I'm like, keep coming back. Just keep coming back. It's all, you know, we're holding hands. Just keep coming back. And I'm just like, I mean, but that's not the answer. If I keep coming back, I mean, are y'all going to tell me something I didn't know next time? So I kept coming back to see if finally somebody would just dump the bucket out, like almost like if you just kept coming, they'd go, okay, you're worthy. Here's the trick. And so I did. And so it took me about 6 weeks to catch on that it was not about him. It was about me. Because I was mad in those meetings. I would go in there and I would be angry because I didn't do anything wrong. I came in here. I know, right? I came in here. I was in a relationship with somebody who drinks too much. It's his fault he drinks too much. If you would just tell me how to do it, I will fix it. We'll be done. And all of a sudden, people started saying things. I'm like, well, maybe I do that. Yeah, I pour out his liquor, but he doesn't know. He has no idea. I mean, he doesn't remember. I mean, because I'm a massive thinker. And so I know when he passes out, if he's got 3/4 of a bottle, he'll never remember he had 3/4 of a bottle. So I take it down to a quarter so that maybe tomorrow will be a better day. Because the liquor store makes more. There's always more. So I walk in this meeting, they tell me, keep coming back. Well, June 17th of that year, of 2010, he goes to rehab on a Thursday of my Al-Anon meeting. I called one of the girls and said, I did it. He's in rehab. Almost thanks for playing. I got it. I mean, I went to Al-Anon. I did my 8 weeks. He's in AA. I'm good. Got it. So take him, and that was the second time I found out that he lost his job and didn't tell me about it. And so I went home that day, and was like, I'm done. I'm not doing this anymore. I'm over it. So he's like, well, you know, and he's, you know, three sheets to the wind. Well, if I go to rehab, will you stay? Maybe. I don't know. You know, put the bait out there. You know, false expectations, false boundaries, all these things that we know not to do. Well, I didn't know then. And so he's like, okay, let me just finish my bottle. So he chugs it. I take my daughter to swim lessons, because at that point she's 2 or 3. Her daddy hung the moon. I understand. Mine did too, for a whole different reason. Take her to swim lessons, you know, and while we're on our way, because the Y is right by Parkwood. And so I'm like, well, just, you know, because I'm going to make it all happen. Everybody's going to be happy. I'm going to run myself ragged, but, you know, Morgan gets to go to swim lessons, Dylan going to rehab. I'm going to go home at some point and get some sleep, and I win. So take Morgan to the Y. She's in swim lessons. Lifeguards aren't paying attention. She falls into the water. And I'm like, you know, I got drunk guy out in the car trying to take her to swim lessons. I finally catch her. At that point, she was done, so we just went on to rehab. At that point, his sister came and got her, so I didn't have to deal with her. We get to rehab, and he's like, I'm an alcoholic. I need treatment. We waited, and it was 5:30 that afternoon. We had to wait until midnight for him to sober up enough for them to take him, because his blood alcohol level was so high that she was like, we should really take you to the hospital, but you're functioning. Like, he's functioning at a, you know, 0.28. Like, he's got it. And I'm like, can I just go to Burger King and get him something to eat so we can, you know, speed up this process, because I know what he needs. So I, you know, do that. He eats. He's in rehab. He spent that Father's Day looking at Morgan through a window, waving back and forth at each other, because I took him socks every day. I mean socks, because that was my way. Oh, by the way, here's the AA big book. You know, while you're in here, catch up on some reading. So, you know, light reading. But I did that. And then he got out, and I thought everything was going to be great. Because while he was in rehab, I met Anna, our spouses were roommates. And when we're in rehab, you know, they have the Al-Anon meeting you go to, and I'm already in Al-Anon. I got it. And they said, 1 in 10 will make it. I said, great. I hate it for all of y'all, because we are the one. And so, I mean, y'all should try better luck next time. That's my whole idea. I mean, we're still working the circuit. We've got this whole life we've got to measure up to. So, you know, Dylan gets out, and then his parents at this point are paying for his bills. And it is soon that I realize that maybe the issue for him falls way back in his life of not being held accountable. But wait, how can I'm pointing all these fingers at his parents? Well, that, you know, of course it benefited me, because I mean, I couldn't afford to pay all the bills. You know, but where am I coming in on this? If I'm judging them for paying our rent to keep him from drinking, what am I doing to keep him from drinking? So I kept going to these Al-Anon meetings, and I was just like, And they kept talking about sponsors. I was like, a sponsor. I was like, okay. I was like, well, if I'm going to do this, I need somebody who can check me at the door. Because I can tell you anything you want to know and keep all my secrets buried deep, deep inside. Very good at it. And so I sat there and I listened. And there was this one lady who stood out who didn't take anything off of anybody. And I was like, okay. You know, I probably test her out a couple of times, but she always came back with these most, you know, poetic things to say. And I was just like, I mean, that makes sense. Okay. So I asked her to be my sponsor. And this was, you know, maybe August. She's like, well, I'm not free until October. I said, okay, I'll wait. No problem. And so I waited because I get what I want. And so it is the part of the plan is that you're going to be my sponsor, and that's how this is going to work. So I will wait till October to make that happen. My qualifier was sober, liquid sober, for about 4 months. I think he dabbled probably more into drugs during that time, and then he started drinking. And so it's drugs and alcohol and pills and all these things. Like, I had no idea. I'm so naive. I knew when he drank. That was obvious. But the pills, I had no idea. I had surgery on my feet. All of a sudden, all my pain medicine is gone. And I was like, wow. You know, I was at work and my feet were hurting. Of course, because I went right back to work because we didn't have money for me to be off. right back to work. And then I didn't have my medicine. And I'm like, how am I supposed to live the rest of my life with somebody when one day I will get sick and I have to rely on them to bring me my medicine? How do you do that? So these questions start coming up. So I work this with my sponsor. First time I met her at a Starbucks, she says, tell me about your higher power. I describe my dad to a T. Handsome, you know, kind of grayish, you know, salt and pepper hair, and you know, have my dad right and God on two on the same pedestals right beside each other. Here's a problem. And she was like, you know, we've got to bring you down a little bit. I didn't tell my family anything. They knew he went to rehab. When I came out of the closet about him being an alcoholic and me living the lifestyle that I led, they were all in the closet with me, suffocating in that little bitty closet. They all knew, but they didn't want to, they let me work through it. Of course, my dad didn't. He told me all the time to leave. Do something different. I can't believe you're doing this with your life. How disappointing. You know, for a girl who's always been patted and told she did a good job. I'm like, Daddy, you told me I could do anything. Anything I wanted to. So I'm going to make him sober. Because I can do anything. And I believe I can do anything, and so I can make him sober. No big deal. Still accepting the challenge. Hello. And so my sponsor put a mirror in front of my face. Not a literal mirror, but she made me look at myself. All of a sudden I realized, I might be controlling. Jeez, a little bit. Just a slight little bit. I might not be looking out for myself. I may not be taking care of myself. I may not be aware of what's going on. And so it was a whole different world. I mean, it's really a slap in the face to realize that all this time that you've been trying to help somebody, you're hurting somebody. I never gave him the opportunity or respect to be who and what he is. I was going to make him who and what I wanted him to be. And how unfair is that? So we went on. You know, and you know, one great thing about him? What a fabulous personality. Great person to be around. We laughed all the time. Drunk, sober, we get along, no big deal. The alcohol was the issue. So we all go through our bad times and our good times. When this, in the good times, you know, when we're, you know, riding the roller coaster, I decide we've been together for 6-7 years at this point. It's time to get married because that's next on the thing to do. It's on the list. And so we do. We do. We decide we're going to get married. So I start planning everything. And I was like, hey, what do you think about, you know, us saying vows to each other? Like, not the traditional ones, but we write our own vows. He's like, no, we'll just whatever they, you know, hello, whatever they tell us to do. I mean, not a whole lot of involvement, but he's like, oh, yeah, we can get married. That's cool. No big deal. I mean, you want a hamburger too? I mean, it's, you know, so totally blasé conversation. And I was going over music with my mom, and she told me, you know, Christina, when people get married, they're happy about it. She's like, and you are just not happy about it. And I was like, I mean, no, not really. The day that I got my wedding dress, I found out that he quit his third job. I didn't tell my mom or my stepmom or a friend of mine that was there. I didn't have the heart to tell them what I was marrying. But I wanted to marry because that's what you're supposed to do, because at least if I got married, I could have a divorce, and then it sounds right, right? I mean, this is how sick you get. And so I got my dress, and I took it, I think it went to his sister's house, because I'm really good friends with his sister. And I'm excited. I'm going to get married on April 28th of 2012. Hello. Coincidence on these dates? I have no idea. So on February 8th of 2012, I woke up, and I said, you know, I'm going to do something different for me. I'm going to take care of me. No more, I don't know how I'm going to buy bread to feed my kid. I don't have a dollar to feed my kid because in all these jobs, I've given him my credit cards. Here, go put gas in your car to go find a job. Go, you know, oh, you need clothes for work? Go get you clothes for work. I don't know in that 4 months that I gave him those credit cards how $12,000 of gas and clothes happen, other than if it happens for all the gas and clothes for everybody that you know to get what you want. I have no idea how that happened. But I was so naive, and it was all in my name. I was like, how am I going to, I can't even afford a wedding. I can't afford to get married. My dad reluctantly put down the money for the venue. He's like, Christina, he's writing the check. You know, you can back out at any time. It's just not a big deal. This is just money. Like, he is, you know, totally, just any time. Just gave me permission. And so, on the day, on my birthday, I said, you know what? I'm done. This is it. I can't do it anymore. And I'm very prideful. I'm very prideful. It was so hard to do because I knew that at the time I didn't make enough money for me to live on my own, pay off all the debt, and be able to take care of my daughter. And so my dad, being the great man that he is, he told me to move home. You come home, we'll take care of it. And I wasn't alone. And so I started the conversations because I don't have the guts to go, by the way, I'm done, it's over. So I go, hey, I know that we talked about when we would get married that you would be on my insurance, but see, you smoke, and so it's going to be $100 more a month, and I just can't afford that. That's groceries. He said, Christina, when people get married, they do that. They put their spouse on their insurance. You're supposed to do that. And I was like, well, I can't afford it. We have to eat. And so that started. You know, it's just chipping away at the block until finally he was like, I don't think it's going to work. I was like, oh, me neither. I'm good. Saved by the bullet. I'm like, oh, I'm good. And so on June 1st of 2012, I moved home. It was the most, it was the hardest thing I ever did. Because when I left home, I was the good kid. I was the kid that always met the expectations. I was the kid that did everything I was supposed to. And so that's what I wanted to do. I didn't want to move home. I wanted to make my dad happy. My dad was ecstatic. He was like, and you know, once I moved home, we would sit on the front porch, and he's got this huge pond. And he's like, just to let you know, if you go back to him, I will dunk you in that pond until you decide something else. Like, he was just very clear on his expectations. But that was something I had to work with my sponsor on. My dad does not get to rule my life. I do. And so I'd gotten very good at telling my dad, I will leave when I'm ready. Because what I wanted is when my daughter turns 15 and she's an angry teenager and she's mad at me because me and her dad are not together, I could honestly look at her in her face and tell her I did everything I could. And that's exactly what I did. I can look at her now and tell her that. Because, of course, she's 7 and she wants us to be together. She wants her family together. So it's taken me 3 years to pay it all back. Because once I moved in, I found out not only are there $12,000 in credit card bills, he hasn't paid his half of the bills in 3 months, they're all in my name. I moved to my dad's house and I had a creditor call me. I've never had a creditor call me. And I was just like, what is that? Who is that? Why do they want $550? Who, I mean, I didn't sign a contract. And I had to figure it all out. And so it took me, you know, a good bit of an extra $3,000 to bury out of that. And I was just like, wow. Okay, this is, you know, he moved back to his parents' house. And so, you know, and they live in Arkansas, and so, you know, we transfer back and forth, and we, you know, he said, well, you can take Morgan. I mean, I know that the mother's supposed to have her. I mean, he wouldn't have been able to take care of Morgan at all. But I knew at this point it was time for me to get me, to be me. And so that's exactly what I did. It took me about a year. I got a job. A job that made $20,000 more a year than what I made. Because now, as my daddy always told me growing up, to be independent, take care of yourself. And it was time to do that. So that's what I did. I got a job that I made more money. I paid it all back. I had Al-Anon. I had these friends in Al-Anon who have supported me. If I went in that room tomorrow and said, by the way, I'm going back, they'd go, okay, we'll pray for you. You know, but they would accept me and I could still keep going. I learned awareness. I learned I can be aware of what is happening in my life. It's not just an alcoholic. It's not just a drug addict. It's everything that I do. It's work. It's my daughter, my relationship with her father, everything. But the only thing that I hate about being aware is that you have to do something about it. That sucks. When you know that you, that all of a sudden you're like, oh gosh, I probably shouldn't go off on them. And then you do, and then you know, oh man, that was the wrong thing to do. I guess I should go make some amends. And mean it. Like, don't just go say, oh, I'm sorry. But you actually have to do it. This is a way of life. It's in everything that we do. You know, so I just found out Monday was my mom's birthday. It was her, would have been her 57th birthday. I struggle with that. But on Monday, I finally grew some courage. And I put in an application to buy a house. To see if I could get pre-approved. See how bad it was. Because we still have this car. You know, the one thing he got was the new car. I got the beat-up car. It has two payments left. But they haven't been great at paying it on time. And I'm a stickler for that. But, you know, we'll have a party in Olive Branch in June 14th. When that car is paid off, y'all just ready for your invitations. But I put in an application to see if I could get a house for me and my daughter. And I got a call on my mom's birthday that I was approved. Not only approved for one loan, I was approved for three loans. And then a friend of mine was sick. And I took her daughter home from dance and took her to her house. And there was a lady there. And I was like, oh gosh, nice to meet you. What do you do? She's like, I'm a realtor. I said, really? She's like, yeah, I specialize in first home buyers. I was like, really? All right, God, Mom. You know, and it was just like, in all this way, God has never left me. He just puts these crumbs out. I call them crumbs, with these people, these opportunities, these things that make it happen, that make my life to where it's, I don't know that I deserve it. I don't know what I did right or who I was in a past life to get it. But it's amazing. It's a gift. You know, when my mom got sick, my mom was fine in October. In November, she was sick. Found out on Christmas Eve that she had lymphoma. Didn't know how bad. So this is where Al-Anon comes in. She was married. She's married to a guy who I had no relationship with. Couldn't stand him. Because he came in and broke up the three amigos. It was me, her, and my brother. That was us. And now you come in and you mess us up. I don't have any use for you. He didn't do anything wrong. He just happened to be the guy in that seat. And so my mom got sick. You know, I've worked in hospitals for 10 plus years now. I know, and in the care that she's receiving, God set that up. I had the ability to be her advocate, to stand beside her and do that for her. And then I go, wow, you know, for a month she was asleep. And I kept praying to God, please give me a second chance. I've never got to tell her I was sorry. I never got to talk to her about me leaving. I never got to talk to her about the things that I did. She was one of my biggest supporters with me going to Al-Anon. She'd call me and go, hey, I just need an Al-Anon thought. I need a, you know, because, I mean, I get a lot of my behaviors from her. One of my biggest supporters. I would never let her hear me speak because I didn't want her to be upset. I didn't want her to be upset about the things that I lived through. I didn't want her to hear me talk about her because she would be embarrassed because I was telling all these people all these things that are a secret. So she never heard me talk. So this is their first time to hear it. Got her moved to Memphis, took care of her. I had to learn to build a relationship with a man that I had no relationship with for 15 years. And whatever decision he made, I had to accept it. I could tell him everything that I know about what's happening to her, but if he didn't want to let her go or, you know, not have her on a full code status, that was his decision. And there were a lot of times I didn't agree, but I walked away with my head held high. I would have never done that 5 years ago. I would have sat there and yelled over her bed and told him what he was going to do because that is my mama and who is she to you? How right is that? That's his wife. They've been married 15 years. I mean, of course, I'm like, well, I've been in her life 30, so, huh? You know, so, you know, so, but yeah, that's my attitude, but that's the sick Christina that I put back. You know, but to be there and to be able to be her advocate to write down to her burial, and I came into my meeting, For her burial, she was cremated. There wasn't a lot of extra, money and things like that. And so we had her cremated. There was a lot of issue with, you know, who's going to take her and who's going to, you know, of course, he didn't want her. And I was like, you know what? I'll take her. I've taken care of this, you know, here I go, you know. And so I took her. I go to a meeting, and it was the day before we were going to bury her. And she's in this beautiful urn. And I'm like, she can't be crooked. She cannot be crooked for eternity. I don't know what I'm going to do. How am I going to make sure that she's not crooked? You know, I'm like, you know, this is pre-Al-Anon. You know, she's not going to be in a box. They're supposed to be in a box. Are they supposed to be in a box? And people are like, oh, you can get a Rubbermaid. Who puts their mom in a Rubbermaid? I'm like, you know, I'm like, oh my gosh. So what do you do? And so I did what I knew how to do because of Al-Anon. I showed up. I took her. I put her on the table. And when it was all said and done, I flagged over the guys to bury her. I watched them bury her. She was even, so I didn't have to correct them. But with all that being said, Al-Anon to me is a gift. It's a way of life. I make a joke that I kept coming back because I'm not a quitter. I'm not a failure. So I have to keep coming back because then I've quit something, and we can't do that. But the truth and the reality is that I have learned how to live a healthy life. I've learned how to live without yelling at my daughter. And when I do, I know to apologize that I was in the wrong regardless of what it was. So she's going to be a better person because of me. She will be an Al-Anon because she's just like me. Hopefully she takes that side and not the other. But, you know, I will remain an Al-Anon in case she does. And maybe that will be my story 10 years from now, that she goes out. But I don't know. So I don't know. I don't know what the future is. But I know if I have Al-Anon, I can face whether it's alcohol, whether it's drugs, whether it's somebody else, somebody else's decision, or whatever life has, I can do it. And I can do it with my group. I can do it with the people that are here. And I can do it by sharing my story and touching somebody else's life. Thank you, guys.